Dennis Packham, Reel 3. How long did you remain at your action station after...
First sighting of the Bismarck.
Well, actually, after the Suffolk had ceased firing.
We stayed at action stations throughout the whole of the chase. And that was for about 31 hours, ill told, until in the early hours of Sunday morning. So we were at action stations all that time, the whole of the time.
Most of the time, there was nothing going on as far as you were concerned.
Nothing, no firing, no, but we were pursuing.
What did you do during that 31 hours?
Well,
in the showroom?
Well, when the food came out, we just had our iron rations. There's little we could do. I mean, the shell bins were most uncomfortable to sit on. We tried to snatch some 40 winks, some at the time. But if something happened, we were ordered to stand still and get ready to push more shells up. Not very much. Again, very, very boring, that part of it.
Were you allowed out to use the bathroom? Or
yes.
Or keep clean, or change your clothes?
No changing clothes, no cleaning, but we were allowed to go to the toilet, yes, to the bathroom, or to the heads, as they were called in the Navy. There was an incident, a bit about that later on anyway, because during the chase, 6 o'clock that evening, so we've been chasing all day, the Bismarck decided to turn round on us because she'd had enough of us chattering to try to shake us off and open fire. Now, at that particular time, it was my turn to go to the toilet, and I was actually in the heads when B turret right above my head opened up, and it shook me to... It shook the ship so much, I thought we'd been hit. And I thought, my goodness. I had to get back to my action station quickly. But the Bismarck actually fired 7 3-gun salvos. That's 21 15-inch shells at us. Luckily, not one hit us. Some were close, but not one hit us. And then she turned back on her course again. During that time, I believe, the Prince Eugen was dispatched from her. Because Bismarck was reduced to about 25, 26 knots through her damage. And I think the commander, Admiral Lutyens, I think his name was, had decided that they would no longer pursue their operation to go out and try and sink ships of convoys, but to get back to, then Brest would have been the nearest, to perform repairs. So those ships had party company at that stage, as far as I'm aware.
And what happened to the Norfolk? Suffolk.
Well, after the 31 hours, well, at 3 o'clock in the morning, Sunday morning, at midnight, that the captain told us that we were, with the Prince of Wales of Norfolk, going to close the enemy and bring him to action at dawn. There was a message, as I understand it, from the Admiralty to say that we were entering a very concentrated area of U-boats. And so... we were given a course, a zigzag course, to pursue in case there was a U-boat around to fire torpedoes at us. I think this was the undoing of the whole thing because, as I understand it from the radar people, we had an echo on one leg of the Bismarck. On the other leg, we didn't have an echo. So it was echo, no echo. Whether the commander of the German ship had picked that up and done a very brilliant thing, he decided to turn, did almost a U-turn, on our outer leg when we weren't in contact. And when we came back, they weren't there. This is at 3 o'clock in the morning, so no question of anybody seeing them. It was pitch dark.
How much news at your action station?
Still at my action station.
How much did you know of what was going on from where you were?
I didn't know the things I've just described right then, but I'm with hindsight, I've learned all these things later, that this was happening. I do remember them saying we were entering a high concentration of U-boats. That was said.
And you remember them saying that you were going into action the following morning?
Oh, the captain came on and said that. That was a general broadcast. He came on and gave us a very vivid description of what he was going to do, yes.
What was your reaction to that?
Pardon?
What was your reaction?
Well, I thought we should be... I think, like many others, I think we were going to be a goner because we were going to close, as he put it, close the enemy, which would have brought us... in the range, well within the range of their big 15-inch guns, and our armoury wouldn't have stood up to that. So it wasn't very happy. I think we were going to be a goner, yeah. But the the fact that we lost contact probably saved my life, because we didn't pick him up anymore.
Did you know that the ship had lost contact with
Bismarck? Yes, I don't know exactly what time, but the time we lost contact was about 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't think we got to know about it until about 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, because then we were going in all different directions. Suffolk was sent west, Norfolk went south, Prince of Wales went east, I think, and to try and find the Bismarck again. But as you know, she was lost for about, 48 hours or nearly that.
Did you stand down from action stations?
Yes, once we were clear of the Bismarck and so on, yes, we stood down from action stations, went to our what they call defence stations. So I was back on lookout duties again with my watches. And we made for a harbour in St John, Newfoundland, because we'd nearly run out of fuel. We'd been going at high speed all this time. And used a lot of our fuel up. I remember going into St John at night because they were bringing all sorts of boxes and stores down for us to load on, but I was still on watch. I was up on the ADP on watch at that particular time, and the cranes were bringing their stores aboard, and we were refueling to get back out again. And we were too far away to join with the Bismarck action then, because eventually she was found, as you know, well down into the Atlantic. Although our captain, I think, I'm told, pleaded with his admiral to be allowed to join them again, I think we were too far away. And so instead we were instructed to join a convoy which had left Halifax. I always remember this convoy. It was about 67 ships, a huge convoy, and it was going along at the speed of 6 knots. And we were bang in the middle of it. And at times I used to have to look over the side to decide whether we were moving at all, because it seemed that everything was standing still. The reason we were escorted, of course, because the Prince Eugen, the cruiser, was still at large and still could have attacked some of our convoys. So we stayed with this convoy for a while.
You see, in the middle of this convoy, were you surrounded by merchant ships? You could actually see them, could you?
Yeah, we could see them all, yes. Yeah. Just tankers, huge merchant ships all around us. And as I remember, only 3 corvettes as anti-submarine ships for the whole of that convoy at that particular time.
No destroyers or anything like that?
No destroyers. The destroyers didn't come out until we got to Western Approaches, when a flotilla of destroyers came out to join the anti-submarine screen, and we departed. I think the main reason is that the U-boats didn't operate right in the centre of the Atlantic. They operated closer to Canada or to our Western Approaches. Otherwise, it's such a big expanse for them, and convoys could have taken all different courses.
Were there any events that you remember from that convoy?
I remember the corvette scurried around and dropping depth charges, but I don't remember seeing any ships sunk.
What happened after that convoy?
To the Suffolk, we went back to Scapa Flow. The admiral from Norfolk, the first cruiser squadron, came aboard and to say thank you for the part we played in it, etc. We weren't very happy because the other ships got leave and we didn't. We were soon back up in Denmark Strait. And later that year, we were on operations off Norway. We went on the first Russian convoy. I'm trying to think of the code name of it. Operation something it was called. Which was a trial convoy to Archangel. We were another cruiser and the aircraft carrier Victorious were the main escort for it. In that case, in that convoy, it was uneventful. The Germans weren't prepared for us to do this. And then we took the next convoy, PQ1, to Archangel from Iceland. That was 12 merchant ships, Suffolk, and we had four destroyers with us. We did have some action then because German Focke-Wulf Condors, the 4-engine bombers, started to shadow us and come out to attack and do things like that. So I had a good sight of some of these bombers because I was on watch on the ADP. But by and large, it was pretty quiet. We didn't lose any ships of the convoy on that convoy. We did go on other operations off Norway where we, the Norfolk and two aircraft carriers, carried out a strike on Petsamo, I think it's called, and Kirkenes, which was well up in the north of Norway, occupied by the Germans then. My recollection of those that operation is that we lost a lot of Swordfish aircraft, I think about 17, in the attack, because the Germans were waiting for us with Messerschmitts.
How many Swordfish did you have on board?
Pardon?
How many Swordfish did the Suffolk have?
No, we didn't have any Swordfish at all. We had three Walrus.
Walruses, right.
But they didn't take part in an operation like that. They were far too cumbersome and slow. No, the carriers, we went... We escorted the Furious. That was our job, to be the AA guardship of the Furious. And the Norfolk was the AA guardship of the Victorious. And the planes were off these two aircraft carriers. But they didn't stand much of a chance because they were pretty slow.
Did you see much of the action then?
Not a great deal. I saw some of the... we heard a lot of it over the loudhail of our fighter pilots going into action. But and our anti-aircraft guns were in action, of course, when their planes were about. But we weren't hit. Neither was Norfolk.
Because the attack was from aeroplanes.
Yes.
Were you asked to go to your action station?
Yes. My action station by then had been changed to action lookout. So I was on the lookout all the time, not only on watch, but on the ADP as well as doing action stations, so I could see quite a bit of what was going on. But we were a lucky ship. We weren't hit, and didn't look like being hit. Some of the merchant ships copped it.
Can you, if you can, describe what you saw in a bit more detail?
Describe what?
What you saw in a bit more detail.
Aircraft on the horizon, a lot of flak, smoke on the horizon, which eventually turned out to be probably a merchant ship on fire or sinking, but nothing close, not close to us.
What happened to Suffolk after that?
After that? As I say, we went on several operations. We went back to Denmark Strait Patrol. We did have one instance, and I think this is, I should mention this before. We captured a ship in Denmark Strait Patrol by the name of, it was called the Pluto. It was a Finnish ship, and it was carrying aviation spirit, because at that time the Finns were allied to the Germans. So she was trying to run the blockade. So we actually captured the ship.
Do you remember when that was?
It was about the time that the Russians and Germans went to war, so that would be in June of 1941. It was before our convoys started. Yes, it was early in June, soon after the Germans invaded Russia. We captured the ship, the Pluto.
And can you describe the circumstances?
Well, we hauled it to and had a gun strained on it, and they didn't try to run away. And we put a landing party down in the boat, mainly Marines as far as I remember, who went aboard and took the ship over. And then I believe it was taken down to Scapa Flow, but I didn't see any more of it then.
What happened to the crew? Were they brought aboard?
No, not that I remember. They were still left on board, but under escort, of course.
Any other moments that you remember from the Russian convoy duties?
The worst thing about Russian convoys was the weather. The weather was atrocious. There was one time when, sitting on my pedestal, I was more or less in line with the funnels. And we were, as well as dipping, we were yawing from side to side. And we got this very heavy wave, and we seemed to yaw, come back, yaw. At this particular time, we went over, we went again, and my heart went in my mouth. I thought we were going over. I thought we were going to capsize. I do remember that, because it was frightening. The ship used to get, I've got some pictures over there, some photographs, used to be covered in ice. The guardrails, which were so many feet apart, It was like just like a wall of ice round the ship. And when we were in harbour, or even at sea, the captain used to come down with us on Folkestone Division with pickaxes to chop all this ice away, because there was a danger of becoming top heavy with so much weight up at the top.
As a lookout, how did you cope with the cold, and how did you get around the ship on the upper deck if it was so icy?
It was very dangerous. As little as you possibly had to, unless you had to. But on a watch, I used to have, at one time, we had some parcels from Canada, I think, from some warm clothing. And I managed to have some jerseys and things like that. Wore these long johns. An overall suit was always the order of the day for Atkins Stations. Clean as you could get. And then on top of that, I remember wearing a duffel coat and a sheepskin coat on top of that. The duffel coat because it's got the hood to come over. Then we were issued with a Russian type of their fur helmets. I had one with them that either you can pull the things down or up over your head, made of sheepskin.
Earmuffs. So,
pardon?
The earmuffs. They
used like earmuffs.
Flaps, right.
Flaps, yeah, that's right. So you could cover yourself pretty well. Then I had a balaclava on where I could just about see that. That's all I left exposed. We had sheepskin gloves. And I say, I had a duffel coat and a sheepskin coat, and it was still very cold. I mean, if you were to touch the steel with a bare hand, you could probably burn your skin off if it was so cold.
Did anyone get frostbite, or did you suffer from frostbite?
Not that I remember, but there may have been occasions when, I mean, got the people had to go to the sick, maybe I didn't, and I don't remember anybody having that. As I say, in our 15 minutes off, we used to go to this forward control sheltered place. There was a radiator, like an iron grid, which didn't give any heat out at all anyway, but at least you were out of the wind and the snow and the rain and all that for 15 minutes at the time. And had a couple of, we used to take turns to go down and make cups of what we call Kai, which is the ship's company's cocoa, during the middle of the watch, to have a mug of hot chocolate. No, my recollection of the convoys wasn't so much of enemy action, but it was the weather. We did have one incident. We were coming back from PQ-18 with another ship, a sister ship called the London, another county class cruiser. And we were bringing a convoy back from Archangel as well. And we ran into a terrible storm, and the convoy was broken up by the storm. So we in the London kept together with two destroyers, because there was news that a German cruiser called the Hipper was at sea. And so we were on our guard for that. And one afternoon, I was on watch at this particular time. Our radar picked up echoes of a ship, and we homed in on it. And we saw this big black shape out on the port bow. I was at my action station then, because we went to action stations. And we got so close, I heard the gunnery officer rapping out the orders from port control that main armament on, that was trained onto the ship. The next thing that was going to go was a ding-ding of the fire bell, and I was so sure it was going to go, I'd actually open my mouth, because the guns were only just below us, because if you sealed everything up, it could burst your eardrums. I opened my mouth and I actually put my fingers ready for the guns to fire. And suddenly there was a signal, a frantic signal, visual signal coming from the ship. It turned out to be one of their own merchant ships. And we were just about to sink it, because we thought it was the Hipper. And that was not just us, that was the London as well. So there were 16, 18-inch guns trained on it. And so they just got out of it. And I remember the destroyers being sent forward to investigate, and saw their tracer shells where they were firing across its bow, to be certain it was friendly and not enemy. And that's one of the things I remember. And another one where we shot down, well, we claimed we shot down a JU-88, and we was near an island called Bear Island on the way back from one of those convoys. And the radar, well, we picked up this plane out of a cloud. It was a JU-88, because I actually saw it. And Captain Marines, who was our officer of watch, ordered our 4-inch guns to go into action. And we think it came down, well, he was certainly came down on Bear Island. And the captain sent a marine landing party ashore in the pinnace, hopefully that they would probably pick up the Germans here, but it was so bad they couldn't even land. I mean, Bear Island is not inhabited. It's probably the only inhabitants are seagulls. It's like a sort of a barren rock in the middle of the sea. So that was another thing that I can remember from there, but it's so long ago, I don't remember everything, obviously.
How long was the Suffolk involved in the Russian convoy?
We went on five altogether. We went on the first one, which was Operation, and I can't remember the name of it. We went on PQ-1, that was going to Russia, PQ-18, going to Russia, and we had PQ-14, and QP, these are the ones coming back, 14 and 15 coming back. So in all, we had five convoys to escort.
Over what sort of period of time?
Well, that was over a long period of time, because we, during the middle of that, we came back to this country and went into, I think it was South Shields, to do a refit for about a couple of months before we went back again. So that was over a period of... The first convoy we went on was in July of 41, and then PQ-1, we sailed from Iceland somewhere near the end of September to get to Archangel early in October. And then we came back and had our Christmas leave. We got Christmas leave in this country because we had to come back to refit. So we were very lucky there. And then after the refit, we went back to operations, eventually on these other convoys. But a lot of it was in the Denmark Strait on patrol. We did go on one or two other operations off the coast of Norway, striking on German targets, mainly escorting aircraft carriers to do that work. One time I remember we took some mine layers up there and they laid mines all around the German harbours. But all in all, those 2 years or so, well, less than 2 years, I think, that we spent up there were miserable. I was despondent with the Navy. I'd lost all my enthusiasm for it because I didn't think this was the Navy I was going to join. Until we eventually came back to London docks at the end of 1942, to do a complete refit, preparing us to go to the far, to the tropics, to the Indian Ocean.
And how long did that refit take?
3 months.
And what did you do during that time?
We had quite a bit of leave, home leave. Had to go on watch during the night, although we had no ammunition on board. We'd taken all our ammunition off at Sheerness. And it was still in the middle of the German night raids on London, and it was happening every night. And we was alongside this big warehouse, a Dorman Long warehouse, I remember this well, where I was on watch. And we were there really as fire watchers, we had no guns. And I remember the shrapnel raining down on this roof of this warehouse as though it was rain. There was more danger, I felt, from our own shrapnel than from the German bombs at that particular time. But they did bomb the docks, as you know, pretty heavily.
How far up the Thames were you?
We was right in London docks, in Silvertown docks.
Right.
Right in the dock, right in the middle. In dry dock. So we were wedged with the wooden beams and things so that the underneath the ship could be seen to. But there was no escape. I mean, if we'd have been hit, that would have been that.
So what happened after the refit?
After the refit, we went back to Scapa Flow to do a work in that period. We knew we were going abroad because, going to the hot countries, because pith helmets and things like that came aboard. I mean, they couldn't disguise it, and we were given the camouflage for the Far Eastern Fleet of a light and dark blue. Nobody said we were going there. We were going to Scapa Flow to start with, did the work up, and then eventually we came back to the Clyde to pick up a military convoy, and in company with an aircraft carrier, Unicorn, escorted this, and destroyers, escorted this military convoy to Cape Town. There were some events on that journey. Some Focke-Wulf condors came out when we were more or less off Gibraltar. We were out to sea off Gibraltar, and they had to go at the aircraft carrier, but all their bombs missed. And then there were some other instances where the destroyers were dropping depth charges because they got contact with U-boats. But we didn't lose any of our ships again. And there was quite, I think, if I remember rightly, we were escorting something like about 30,000 troops who were eventually going round the Cape and up to the Middle East to Montgomery's army. So that took about a month to get down there, 4 weeks. We called into Freetown on the way. And then we left them at Cape Town, and another escort took over to take them up the Indian Ocean into the Suez.
How did you feel about service in the Far East?
The weather was better. We had a crossing the line ceremony when we crossed the line for the first time, when I was initiated.
Can you describe that?
Well, people dressed up as clowns and all sorts of funny things, and a huge canvas bath was rigged up. And all the novices who hadn't crossed the line before were taken to this bath and ducked in no uncertain manner by King Neptune, so-called. Had the marine band playing. Yeah, but it was quite an eventful day. There was more or less, is the equator before Freetown or afterwards? It's around that area, anyway. When was it sea? So that was a bit of fun, I suppose.
When did you escort those troop ships?
April of 1943, we left this country, left the Clyde.
What happened to the Suffolk after you delivered your convoy?
Right, we were going to spend a couple of days at Simonstown, and we had some shore leave there, but we had to come out in a hurry because we had a report. There were still some German ships in the Indian Ocean, merchant ships converted into raiders. They carried guns. One of them carried E-boats, and it was known as Raider H. That was the code name for it. And because this convoy that we'd left was going up that coast, there was reports that Raider H was making her way towards it, so we had to go out in a hurry. And we got as far as Mauritius Island when it was all called off. It was either a false alarm or it didn't happen. And for the first time in my life, I went to Mauritius. Not quite like it is now, but it was still Mauritius. And then we made our way to Mombasa, where we joined the Eastern Fleet, as it was called then, to start operations from there. Unfortunately for me, during one of those stays in Mombasa, I caught malaria. And one of my photographs over there is just after I recovered from it, when I don't look all that good. From Mombasa, I think our next journey was on to Bombay, where we were taking a convoy from Mombasa to Bombay, but because I was indisposed, I don't remember much of that journey. I was in the sick bay all the time.
Was your job still as a lookout?
No. I changed my division then. I was then a torpedo man. And so I no longer did those duties. I carried out most of my duties between decks. My action station was in the damage control headquarters. That was also between decks. And our jobs were to repair damaged cables and direct the shipwrights to where the ship had been hit, if it was going to be hit, to repairs and things like that. So,
where was the damage control centre?
Right in the centre of the ship, and the next deck down from the upper deck.
Who was in charge of that?
The commander, engineering commander, he was in charge. And there was a team I was in there with the maps and everything. One of my jobs, I'd be on the phone to get messages to certain parts of the ship as necessary.
What did your ordinary job involve as a torpedo man?
As a torpedo man, you'll find this strange because Suffolk didn't carry torpedoes.
So you were an electrician, effectively.
That's right. We did the electrical work, and that was mainly my work to maintain lighting, fans, pumps, things like that. Fairly elementary, because I hadn't had all that much training as an electrician. In fact, I did some of it when we were ashore in Durban. We did some stays in Durban, South Africa, during this tour of duty out there, where we did our refits. But I got as far as Bombay, didn't I? And then we went down to Trincomalee. And that was the base for the Eastern Fleet from then on, for a period anyway.
Dennis, Dennis Packham, Reel 4. Based in Trincomalee.
Yes.
In Trinca, Ceylon, is it then?
Ceylon, it was called then, yes.
Yeah. What were you doing?
Well, we were part of a cruiser squadron in the Eastern Fleet, which had some capital ships. There was the Repulse, Queen Elizabeth and Valiant, all under the command of Admiral Somerville. There was a couple of aircraft carriers, the Illustrious and the Formidable. And some of our duties were going out to attack Japanese-occupied islands in the Bay of Bengal, the Andaman and Nicobar Islands.